Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. Happy New Year from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me, box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. All right, well, before we do get started, I want to encourage you as you make your travel plans here in 2014, remember to go to JohnnyDollarAir.com first. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate, so you can name your own price on hotels, rental cars, airline tickets, and even more, or you can choose from great published fares. Plus, if you purchase through JohnnyDollarAir.com, a part of your purchase price goes to support the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. So remember, JohnnyDollarAir.com. Well, now it's time for us to take a listen to today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Pier Lane Matter, Parts 3 and 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Your number's ringing now, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, swell.
Aimwell Agency.
Aimwell Detectives.
Yes? Who are you calling, please?
Want to talk to Mr. Aimwell. My name's Johnny Dollar.
This is Aimwell.
I understand your agency's been looking for the Perling girl for about a year now.
Oh, you do, huh? And who told you that?
Mrs. Perling.
I never heard of you, or her, or a girl. So long.
This is the operator. Were you cut off, Mr. Dollar? I'll call them back.
Never mind. Call me a cab, honey. I'll talk to them in person.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Eastern Liability and Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Perling matter. Item 7, $3, cab fare, my hotel to the office of the Aimwell Agency. A red-headed girl at the switchboard looked me over like I was a car she didn't want to buy. I told her my name and that I wanted to see Niles Aimwell. She told me to sit down and wait. 3 minutes later, she waved me down a long, carpeted corridor. I followed directions. A typewriter clacked somewhere. Men in those suits with the little shoulders and hem-stitching for lapels moved in and out of offices. It looked more like an advertising office than a detective agency. Finally, I opened a door and stepped into a small room that was decorated in gray. Gray walls, gray carpeting, gray draperies. A desk, a brass lamp, a filing cabinet, and a man were there. He didn't get up when I walked in, but slouched back in his chair and let his bald head rest against the wall.
You're kind of determined, aren't you?
I suppose so. You're Aimwell?
Mm-hmm. On the phone, I told you I didn't know what you were talking about. Now I'll tell you again. Don't slam the door when you go out.
What are you paying rent here? If I've got it figured right, you wish you weren't paying it. But then a place like this draws a snappier crowd of clients, so what you've got in the end is more clients and more rent, no more money for yourself.
Now that you've said all that, will you get out of here?
I know one of those snappy clients happens to be the Perlings. I know you've been trying to find their daughter. This is my ID. This is my license, bond, letter of authority from Eastern Liability. Now, 2 days ago, the papers carried a story that David Perling was killed in a boating accident in Key West.
That was a lot of baloney. It was retracted.
I know that, but I talked to a reporter down in Key West who told me Perling paid to have that story about himself printed. My client had an idea Perling might have done it to set up the stock market for a killing. Mrs. Perling told me he did it in the hope his missing daughter would see the story in the papers and contact home. Now, what have you got to say?
Here's your stuff.
One other thing. Perling the kind of man who'd pull a trick like that?
Ask him. You got a way about you I don't like.
Well, that's too bad. But in between the time I called and the time I got here, you had time to call the Perlings on the phone and ask about me. They said it was all right to tell me what I wanted to know. If there was a daughter, if you'd been hired to look for her, if you don't tell me, you might jeopardize the part of the rent the Perlings pay for you.
Now, look, Dollar.
I've got something else you aren't going to like. I might just want to see your operative's report on the case. I might have the idea that if you've been looking for her this long, you might just be dragging it out a little bit. You know, the rent money, it's due every month.
Get Mr. or Mrs. Perling on the phone right away. I hope they tell me to throw you out on your ear.
Well, while we're waiting, let's get back to the questions. Where have you looked? What have you done?
We pulled a case 11 months ago, almost to the day. The girl's 5'5", 114 pounds, no visible scars, no glasses. Black hair, brown eyes. She's 24, will be 25 next month. We thought we had her located in Muncie, Toledo, Detroit, Fort Worth, and Pueblo. We think she's traveling alone. We think she's a little girl who was fed up to here with Mama and Daddy and just struck out for herself.
But you haven't found her.
Five men have been looking on 8-hour shifts, 7 days a week for 11 months to the day. Five men, 11 months, 7 days a week, and I'm one of the five. My feet hurt, my head aches most of the time. My wife's thinking about divorcing me. And then you walk in here and plant yourself in my office. You're suggesting maybe I can go out and find her just like that. Well, I can't. Nobody can. So I want you to know I kind of resent that remark about how I'm laying down on the job. And if you don't take it back, I'll have to cave in the side of the wall with you. What do you got to say, Dolly?
I take it back, Mr. Raywell.
Sit down and have yourself a smoke. Hello? Well, hello, Mrs. Perling. Mr. Dollar's in my office now. Yes, I'll cooperate with him. Yes, Mrs. Perling, I understand. He explained it all to me. Yes, ma'am. The whole file, everything. How would you like somebody to bring up a bottle of cold beer?
Oh, I'd like that fine, Mr. Aimwell. Niles Aimwell, in between complaining about the abundance of bad private operatives in the detective business, showed me how good he was. The Jeannie Perling file was a comprehensive day-to-day report on the investigation. His discouragement in the case was understandable. The only thing that meant something was the picture of Jeannie Perling. Coal black hair over a fresh white-skinned face. Dark eyes, a nice smile. Somehow, not my idea of the daughter that would belong to David Perling. Too old, too young, or too something. I couldn't put my finger on it. If I had been able to, I could have ended this expense account right here. As it was, I spent $100,000. Somebody else's money, sure. But I spent it just the same.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I'm certainly surprised at this development. You say Perling's daughter is missing?
That's right, Mr. Scottman. And I'm convinced that the detective agency he's had looking for have been doing just that.
Well, then, I'm relieved to know you got to the bottom of this matter. I'm sorry, of course, for Mr. and Mrs. Perling. But, as I say, relieved that there was no attempt at financial manipulation. I think then I can call you off the case. There is no case now.
Nope, guess not. And that's the way it stood at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I told Mr. Scottman I'd send him a bill. We shook hands and he wandered off to see if he could get a night flight back to Hartford. I went up to my room to pack and was folding a shirt all wrong when it struck me that I suddenly didn't believe anything or anybody. The idea that there was money in it somewhere still kept coming back to me. I couldn't shake it. I finished packing and left my bags at the desk. I wandered out and found a bar and sat down to think. After a couple of hours, nothing much occurred to me. But I did something anyhow.
Oh, hello, Dollar.
Hi.
My plane doesn't leave till 11 o'clock. I haven't had dinner yet.
I didn't come about dinner, Mr. Scudman.
Well, what is it?
Well, how does this case strike you?
Eh?
A phony death report, a missing girl, a stock market manipulation that didn't come off. How does it strike you?
Well, very neat, if that's a phrase I can use, Mr. Dollar. We had a question with serious implications to it. We have an answer now. That's what we wanted.
But it's too neat.
I'm not sure I know quite what you mean.
Look, you first called me in because it was halfway in your mind that Perling's alleged death was for the purpose of making money on the market. Now, why did you think that?
It was a possibility.
But what else? What about Perling?
What do you mean?
Do you know him? Ever met him? Do you think he was capable of a thing like that?
Not now. No. I have proof from you that that wasn't his reason at all.
But you thought so before you had that proof. You suspected it.
Suppose I did, yes.
Well, I didn't know him from a load of coal, but I always figured there's money in it somewhere. And I've met David Perling. He doesn't seem like the kind of man who'd worry about a grown daughter who didn't like him and ran away. Just didn't seem that way.
Oh, here now. A detective agency working on the case, a story in the paper.
But no police, Mr. Scottman. No bulletins. No 100% effort to find her. Why?
I suppose you have a good point.
I'm sure I have a good point, Mr. Scottman. Money's always a good point. But what money, how, why, I don't know. I can't answer those questions. I wish I could. If I could, I'd know that a man like Dave Perling was lying through his teeth if he told me he wanted his daughter back safe at home. I'd know why he was lying. I know I'm just talking and getting nowhere right now, but... Well, I thought I'd better tell you what was on my mind.
Yes, well, you've certainly done that. Now what?
That's up to you.
Oh. Well, if you feel so strongly about this, I think then you should continue. I thought it was ended, but in view of the circumstances, continue. By all means, continue.
Well, Dollar?
Well, you're working late.
Yeah, I'd rather stay here than go home sometimes. Most of the time.
Aimwell, we might be seeing quite a bit of each other.
How did you know?
Hmm?
Perling told me to contact you. You're pretty cute, Dollar.
Tell me why.
You hardly ever run across a picture of a girl you'd like to look at as much as this Perling dame.
Oh, I might have.
You know, you kid me most of the time, and I'm an old slob who stands around with hardly any fast answers. But you aren't kidding me this time, Pally. You show it all over. If I walked in a place and I seen a girl as nice looking as this, and I had me business with her, I'd be the luckiest guy in the world. Now, there are women, and there are women. But if that picture means anything... Boy, she's a woman. And you want to meet her, right?
Sure I want to meet her, but you're getting romantic.
And if I saw but didn't have any business with her, just saw, I'd go take a walk around the block before I talk to anybody. Yeah, I know. And I don't blame you. You're a very lucky fella. You're going to see her. That's why Perling asked me to contact you.
Huh?
Here. Came in about an hour ago. One of our men located her.
Where?
She's in New Orleans.
He handed me the wire and I read it over. Then I looked at him, he looked at me. I didn't ask any questions, he didn't say a word. It was a wonderful make-believe world, but it really didn't exist. Too neat and too tidy. And we all know the world's full of bumps. Ever hear of Mount Everest? Johnny Dollar.
Dave Perling, Mr. Dollar. I want to talk to you.
Hello, Mr. Perling.
Mr. Aimwell tells me you're in his office looking into my private affairs.
If investigating the matter I came here for involves your private affairs, I guess I did that.
I should be irritated, I suppose. And I guess I'm not. When can I see you?
Most any time. How about today?
I'll be at my house all day long.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Eastern Liability and Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Perling matter. Item 9, 10 cents, one phone call to Morton Scottman advising him that Jeannie Perling had been located in New Orleans by one of Aimwell's operatives. Mr. Scottman thought that over for a while and then assumed it would be in the best interests of Eastern Liability to make certain this was the truth. I told Mr. Scottman I intended to do just that. Item 10, $5, cab fare from the New Weston Hotel to the home of David Perling.
Hi. Come on in.
The man who opened the door wasn't a servant. He wore a dark blue double-breasted suit. He smelled of cigars and bourbon and private detectives stuck out all over him. He jabbed a pudgy finger in the general direction of what later turned out to be the library, and I followed. The room we went into was empty, except for us. As far as I could see or hear, the rest of the house was empty, too. The man in the blue suit sat down on a leather sofa and pointed to a quart of bourbon that had just come out of a sack.
You must be this Dollar guy, huh?
Yeah.
Mr. Perling will be along in a minute. He asked me to say hello to you. By the way, my name's Brad Copeland. I'm one of Niles' men. Niles Amwell?
That's great. Where is Niles?
He's with Mr. Perling. They'll be along. Sit down, relax. They said they thought it was about time for a little conference.
What for? The girl's been found, hasn't she?
Oh, sure, sure. Now they got to figure some other things out.
I'll bet.
You don't believe much of this, do you?
Nope.
Well, then I'll put it this way. I'm the guy who found Jeannie Perling. How about it now?
Okay. Look, I got put on this thing because an insurance company executive thought Perling might have had a false death report made on him to juggle some things in the stock market.
Oh, that story in the papers about Perling dying, huh?
Yeah, Perling paid to have that story printed, all right. But not for any stock market angles. He did it to try and scare up this daughter of his who scrammed away from home a year ago. Now, I found that hard to believe. Even after I talked to Niles Amwell and he told me the agency had been hired to find the girl a year ago. I suppose you're one of the men who's been looking.
Yeah, that's about it. No luck either. And yesterday morning comes a phone call. I don't know who it is, tells me where she's living, what name she's using in New Orleans. I scram down there by plane and check it out. It's all true. So I come back here and here I am. Conference.
You found her on a tip from somebody you don't know? Man or woman?
Always a man's voice. Wonderful, ain't it, what happens sometimes?
How does it look to you?
Like a sealed freight car full of nothing. That's the girl down there in UO, all right. I managed that. I picked up her prints and checked them with what we had to go on. But what's what, I don't know.
What's Amwell going to do now?
That's why the conference. We see what we'll see. Relax.
I tried to do that, but I didn't do very well. Copeland settled to his bourbon, and I picked up and laid down a half a dozen magazines, smoked two cigarettes, paced up and down. Finally, I heard a door open somewhere, and Niles Amwell and David Perling walked in the room. Then Amwell motioned Copeland to his feet, and both of them left the room without a word. David Perling and I were alone.
How much do they pay you, Dollar?
Oh, I'm paid well enough. What's that got to do with it?
I was just curious, is all. You seem like a competent man. As a matter of fact, the most competent I've met, and that includes Mr. Amwell and Mr. Copeland. By the way, I just fired them.
Really?
I don't think I need them anymore now that I know where Jeannie is.
Oh?
You've had an extraordinary interest in my affairs lately. I'm willing to bet that you won't leave me alone until you're satisfied about my daughter.
You'd be right.
I want Jeannie to come home. Here, where she belongs.
Why don't you go get her?
I think that might be difficult under the circumstances. I'm afraid she bears considerable rancor for myself and Mrs. Perling. Perhaps someone like you could, persuade her that it would be the best thing to do.
I go down to New Orleans and get her?
Exactly.
I was going anyway.
Oh? Why?
Well, offhand, you don't seem like the father who's happy to know that his daughter, whom he hasn't seen or heard from in a year, is alive and well. You haven't made a move to go and pick her up yourself. Also, she was found too soon and too fast after I got in on the picture.
You can stop right there. I'm sure I wouldn't even attempt to explain any of those things.
I didn't think you would. Or could.
Hmm?
I'm on my way to New Orleans, Mr. Perling, to get your daughter. I think she'd be crazy if she came back here, but I'll take it up with her.
Do that.
I wonder if you'd like to try to explain something else for me.
What?
Why you were feeling me out a couple of minutes ago to see if I'd buy off.
Get out of here. Get out!
Why not? Expense account item 11, $113.15. Airfare, incidentals, New York to New Orleans, Louisiana. The temperature was exactly 28 degrees hotter when I landed. In the cab from the field, I peeled off my coat and loosened my tie and took off my hat. I walked into the lobby of the Roosevelt Hotel that way. Everyone else seemed cool enough in linens and tropicals. Everyone except myself and a big blonde giant of a man leaning against the CNS ticket counter.
Boy, take Mr. Dollar to 511.
The giant smiled when he saw me and stuck out his hand.
Well, well, well. I'm certainly glad to see you. We thought you'd never get here. Hope you had a pleasant trip.
I was okay.
I know you're tired and hot and would like to wash up a little and refresh yourself, but the rest of the boys are headquartered in 810. They're mighty anxious to meet you. Mighty anxious. Us Delta cotton growers are gonna make it or break it at this convention, yes, sir.
Yes, sir, we sure are, aren't we?
As soon as you're cleaned up, you come right over. We have a drink and I'll show you around the town.
Yeah, that'll be swell. 8:10?
8:10. About an hour?
About an hour.
I'll see you.
Hey, clerk.
Yes, sir?
How long have the Delta cotton growers been in town?
Delta cotton growers? Well, they had their convention last month, sir.
Who's registered in 8:10?
We have no 8:10, sir.
I'd done someone dirty. When he came over with hand out in front, I was supposed to say, you got the wrong fellow. My name's Dollar. But I made him play it out for a particular reason. He wanted to know who I was, and he didn't quite know. But then I wanted to know who he was, and I didn't quite know. I wanted to know him because of that .38 strapped under his left arm. It bulged out just enough to make me curious. By 7:30, I'd eaten dinner and found an address on Ursuline Street, the address where Jeannie Perling was living. A mailbox carried that name. It was one of those unpainted apartment houses in the French Quarter, full of heat and low-watt light bulbs. The girl who opened the door was a medium-sized blonde, and she wore a black dress. The girl I was looking for had coal black hair.
Yes?
How do you do? My name's Johnny Dollar. I came here to see Jeannie Perling.
Come in, please. You're a friend of Jean's?
In a way. I just came from New York.
You know her father, then?
Yes.
Oh. I'm Janice Floyd, Jean's roommate. This way. Careful, it's a little dark.
Sure. Maybe I had the feeling when I saw the black dress. But I knew I had it when Janice Floyd turned and led me through the two large rooms that made the apartment. I thought that was the end of it, but there was one more room. The blonde girl stood to one side so I could see in. The perspiration began to trickle down my face. I knew what was coming.
Here she is, Mr. Dollar.
She was there, all right. As lovely and as young and beautiful as the picture. There was a candle burning at her head and feet. And she was dead. I don't know how long I stood there in that dark room staring down at her. I think there were other people in there, too. Dark people, heads bowed, hands folded in front of them, all looking at her. How did it happen?
Leukemia. You know, didn't you know her very long?
No. No, as a matter of fact, Miss Floyd, I didn't ever know her. I certainly didn't know she was dead when I came here tonight. I hardly expected
her. She asked that it be this way. But who are you?
I'm an insurance investigator.
From her father?
Not exactly, no.
Oh, yes, I see it now. You aren't the first one who's been here looking for her. There have been others. Detectives and lawyers trying to get her to go back.
What?
If he'd loved her, if they'd loved her for just one unselfish moment, she would still be there. Well, Mr. Dollar, she's where her father can't bother her anymore. You tell him that when you go back to New York. Tell him he can stop hiring lawyers and detectives to find her. Now get out.
Expense account item 13, $5, the usual charge in any city for having a legal document copied and photostated. A death certificate verifying the fact that the girl had died on the 20th day of the month. A medical report attached to the certificate named the cause of death as leukemia. I had copies of all these legal documents by 10 o'clock the following morning. I even went through the motions of phoning the desk and asking for a bill and making a plane reservation for that night. I had a feeling someone would be very interested to see me take care of all those things, and I was right. The big blonde man with the .38 happened to be in one corner of the lobby when I paid my bill. He also happened to be at the airport when I picked up my ticket, but then he got careless. I walked through the gate, waited 2 minutes, and slipped back to grab a cab in front, just in time to see him wheel a battered convertible out of the parking lot and head back for town. I followed in my cab. He went to the Ursuline Street address. 2 minutes later, he came out. Expense account, item 14, $8. I let my cab go and strolled up to him just as he was getting in his car. Hiya.
What?
Look, we've been playing games long enough, don't you think? Well?
Why don't you go back to New York and do what you have to do?
Deliver this death certificate? I don't believe it.
You saw her dead, didn't you?
Still don't believe it.
That's too bad, because that's the way it is.
He got in his car, started it up, drove away. I stood there and watched him go. Money, I kept saying to myself. Money. There's money in it somewhere. Plain old money.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, there's still money in it. More money than it takes to save a life. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the final episode of this week's story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, Johnny's certainly putting quite a bit on intuition. I won't comment on it too much more than that, just because I do remember how it ends, and I don't want to even intentionally give away something that folks don't want to hear. But be sure and be back with us on Friday as we wrap this story up. And join us tomorrow. We'll be bringing you an episode of Nick Carter. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.